This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Well, when I retired from swimming, I really wanted nothing to do with swimming.
How do we find this next star?
Oh, why you get all the hard questions?
That's what presidents are for.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you got the big designation.
Making it better for future athletes such that they're able to continue swimming way into their careers, reach their peak, and hopefully come back and contribute, which is what I really hope for Joseph as well.
Hi, you're listening to The Hard Tackle, and I'm ST Sports reporter Deepan Raj Ganesan. Unless you've been cut from all forms of communication for the past week, you'd have seen the big announcement from one of our biggest sports stars. Joseph Schooling, the only Singaporean to have won an Olympic gold medal, announced his retirement from competitive swimming on April the 2nd. In a post on Instagram, the 28-year-old who won the men's 100-metre butterfly final at the Rio 2016 Games said, "Today marks the beginning of a new chapter." By now, you'd have heard and read all about what Schooling has had to say, and in this episode, my guests and I will dive in on what's next, what we as a sports industry can learn, and who can perhaps take over Joseph Schooling. Joining me today are Singapore Aquatics President and former national swimmer Mark Che, two-time Olympian David Lim, and my colleague, assistant sports editor Rohit Brishnath. David, I'll start with you first. The last time that you were here, of course, in the studio with me, which was last March, you said retirement would be a good option for Joseph Schooling. And 1 year later, it has happened. I'll ask you for Toto predictions next time. Were you surprised at all that, he has taken that option, and do you expect it to take this long before he made the decision?
Oh, the timing of the announcement is different from, I think, how probably Joseph felt. But I think a lot of people need to understand that elite athletes are held ransom by their own high standards. I think because of the way that the training has been for him, or he's been limited to the training, I don't think he is able to replicate some of the form that he had earlier in the earlier years. So I think as an elite athlete, that there has always been an option to maybe call it a day, because you can't put in the time, the work needed to get the kind of results, then that is an option. So that's how I felt last March, where you asked me, then that was my honest truth.
Okay. Rohit, you have had a front row seat to this whole retirement announcement. Could you give the listeners and me an insight into when this interview took place? How did you feel after speaking to him?
So the interview took place some weeks ago. I knew he was going to retire. And so we sat down for a really long chat. I actually was exactly 84 minutes. And I think one of the interesting things, both Mark and David will know, is that when athletes are competing, there is a limit to what they are going to reveal, because, they are competitive beasts. They don't want to tell you everything. But I think so it was really nice to speak to him because he was retiring. There are a lot of things about him we didn't know, and a lot of things, I followed his career, but obviously there are so many things I didn't know. So I found out so many things. It was so nice, for example, to listen to his confidence, and confidence is such a wonderful thing, which, again, athletes don't like to reveal necessarily when they're playing, but, to hear him say that, at the Olympics, they were playing in his sandbox, which might sound cocky, but it's not cocky at all. I think that was his confidence. That's what you need to be a great athlete, talking about how it was his race to lose, and how he felt, and, the great conversations he had with Michael. And I think Michael Phelps is extraordinary as a peer and as a competitor. And being so incredibly honest about his complacency later. And I think that's one thing that I'm sure we're all going to talk about, that, we talk a lot about athletes who lose, right? But one of the things that Joseph has also taught us and what we have to learn is about what happens when you win. We're not used to winning such big medals. So what happens when you win? A lot of things happen to an athlete when they win. They can become complacent, as he did for a little while. Some athletes become depressed. Some athletes feel, okay, my whole life I've chased something, and at 21 years old, I've got it. Now what do I do? How do you reset? So I think he gave me what I always want from athletes. I want insight into their brains, into what compels them, what moves them, what they fear. And so, talking to him was, as it always is when talking to athletes, it was an education.
All right, Rohit, you touched on several themes there, and I think it's something that we'll go into and talk about. But very quickly, I just want to also find out emotionally, where were you? Because I looked back in terms of the old articles, and even when Joseph was very young, you had written some stuff about him, about his parents. So to follow through that journey and then now to see that journey, and at least as a swimmer, have you had time to reflect on that and how you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I always feel privileged, you know, to watch athletes, because I watch a lot of athletes at practice, and I know what they go through and how much, which most people I think don't see. And I think I wish people knew how hard athletes work, often for very little reward. You know, we tend to focus only on failure, but actually athletes work so incredibly hard. So for me, this journey was amazing. I mean, I think I wrote in my column that basically he took us to places that we have never been before as people in Singapore. And that is an extraordinary thing to be part of. And obviously that night in 2016, again, I use the word privilege. You know, I was with two other colleagues of mine, and both Singaporeans, both were crying. And it was an incredibly moving moment, you know, to see Joseph almost stunned, expecting to win, but yet stunned by the fact that he had won, you know, watching Michael Phelps praise him. And then going through all the ups and downs, I think you have to feel a certain, you have to feel emotional. I feel athletes take you for a ride, and then it's up to them when they want to end that ride. And you sort of always wish the ride goes on, because it's such a fantastic thing. Yeah.
Fantastic to hear that. Mark, when did you first hear of that decision to retire? What did you tell him? Did you at all try to, you know, convince him to reconsider his decision?
Yeah, Dipan, of course, Rohit and Uncle David here. Is it good to be here? Well, SAQ, we first heard about it actually the weekend before he made his announcement. Of course, there'll always be speculation on when he'll retire, when he'll call it a day. I think there was also a question on his consistency in terms of practice, where he's actually training. But of course, you know, there was still hope that he would continue on after he ORD'd in January. But I think he made the decision that, you know, summiting that mountain again to reach the kind of heights and expectations that he had would be something which would be very hard right now. It's about motivation as well. And he has other summits to climb.
David and Mark, maybe just reflect back on your own retirements during your career. How difficult was it to come to that decision, and what are the factors that you considered before you told yourself or told the public or told the media, I'm calling it quits? Have you ever considered a comeback since?
For me, no. My retirement was basically due to NS. Okay, once I finished NS, I knew that I was done. You know, I was done. After my time in NS, I spent another 3 months training, and I went for my last SEA Games, and that was it. It was quite simple for me, because I knew I could never replicate the form that I had, maybe in the 88 Olympics, you know. And it's just, I wasn't in the right environment, so I decided that was it, you know.
What about you, Mark?
Well, it was a rather easy decision for me. I think when I was very young and I took swimming a bit more seriously, I had a good, you know, community around me that actually asked me what I wanted to achieve. And I wrote down everything that I wanted to achieve, including like going to the Olympics, medaling at, you know, getting gold medal at Southeast Asian Games, making a final at Asian Games. And, you know, I wasn't as fortunate as some of our other athletes who were able to defer national service, but I served my military service. I went on a scholarship, athletic scholarship to BYU. I never did quite hit my times after that because of various reasons. One of them is, of course, injury. But when I was done with college swimming, I knew that I completed everything I wanted to in my career, and it was time to actually move on.
So when I asked, you know, have you ever considered coming back since your retirement? So in the months that follow, in the weeks that follow, did you ever look back on a decision and maybe when you went out to the pool again and you find the love again and you considered coming back? Is there a possibility at all that Joseph might, you know, find that love again, do you feel?
Well, when I retired from swimming, I really wanted nothing to do with swimming. I think, you know, you had, I mean, my coach was Mr. Kee Soon Bee, right? And he always believed that the fitter you are, the better you are. And every session seemed to be longer and more mileage and more volume. So I was done with my 20K sessions a day. I was done with swimming and competing. I wasn't really into... I think back then, the whole Singapore Aquatic or Singapore Swimming Association back then wasn't... I mean, it wasn't the association it is today, right? Where we're very athlete-centric. We really wanted to build the relationships with athletes and hopefully give them a pathway after. And, you know, I just like didn't want anything to do with swimming. But I think later in life, I looked back at swimming and I thought that this is something which I could really come back and make an impact, making it better for future athletes such that they're able to continue swimming way into their careers, reach their peak and, you know, hopefully come back and contribute, which is what I really hope for Joseph as well.
Mm-hmm. David, I think it's quite interesting that you mentioned that, you know, you retired shortly after national service, which is quite similar to Joseph, right? So what was in your thinking at that time? Did you just feel that because of 2 years in national service, you know, you won't be able to logically go back to the form that you were in before? Is that the same way Joseph is probably thinking about it?
I would think so, because what we went through in national service, although back then I graduated and then came back to serve. So the deferment that Mark was referring to, for me, it was my time in the NS. I spent it swimming and playing water polo. But I felt that I didn't feel myself being useful. I mean, every day we're just swimming and playing water polo. I just got really sick of it. I had to sit down and consider, because I retired in September of 1991. And I just had to train another year or less than that to make it to the 92 Olympics. But I still didn't want to. The force was very strong.
So when we look at the psyche of an athlete, and Rohit, I'll bring you in on this one. In terms of Joseph's mindset, would it be simple to say that he would have thought, can I make another Olympics? And if the answer is no, then it's retirement. Because some might say, why not he try for like a SEA Games again? Because that's more achievable, that's more in your reach, right, as compared to Olympics. So would an athlete's mindset be to always aim for the highest, and if I'm not able to reach the highest, then that's it for me?
I think that's pretty difficult to answer, because I just think it's an athlete-to-athlete situation. But I would feel, yes. I mean, if you have been an Olympic champion, then you don't necessarily want to settle just... you're not swimming just for the fun of it. I mean, I don't think so. I think, you know, you're swimming for the challenge. You're swimming to, you know, find your best, to be the best, to beat the best. So obviously, if you've been an Olympic champion, why would you want to go and, you know, just win SEA Games gold? That doesn't seem something that I would think likely. You might just do it as a farewell, that's fine. But it's not something that could become, I would think, a number one goal. I think like, you know, both of them, you know, they're both great swimmers. You know, they've been to the Olympics, Mark and David. And, you know, they're saying, you know, you just get tired of it. You know, sometimes you just, some people don't like the traveling in sport. Some people don't like the training. Some people don't like the grind. Some people don't, you know, they've had enough competition. They've met their goals. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm totally okay with him sort of quitting, and I completely understand it. Why?
All right. So Schooling retires with one Olympic gold medal, right? I mean, it's way more than any of us can dream of in a lifetime. But is there a sense here of what could have been? You know, people might say, could he have won two? Could he have gone to more and been more successful? Lots of questions in that regard. I would ask, first and foremost, do you feel like he reached his peak almost too early? Could there have been a better support for him to ensure that this peak would have sustained after that, Mark?
And those are really good questions, right? About peak and all that. Of course, on hindsight, we can make our own guesses and suggestions. But I think, you know, you look at his trajectory, it was a very steady trajectory. You know, he, from 2012 all the way to 2014 when he got his gold medal, and of course 2016 again, and 2017 at the World Championships where he medaled in. I think the ascent was good, was smooth. And the question I actually have is really about whether he was able to sustain that, right? And whether he had the right motivations. And I think these are all, when it comes to Singapore, we've never had an Olympic champion. We have a handful of world champions, but no, none in a blue ribbon event like aquatics at the pinnacle of sports, which is the Olympics. So I think there were a lot of hygiene issues that I had in my mind about whether we're able to embrace as well as support an Olympic champion in Singapore, right? Now, of course, if you talk about, you know, the coaching requirements, the infrastructure, the support systems in Singapore, great. But I think the question I had was really, as a community, as a sporting culture, were we ready to embrace something like that? Which is probably why Joseph, you know, post-2016, when he got his second deferment, decided to go back to the US to train, because, you know, it was a more conducive environment for him, you know, less distractions, and probably, you know, better sparring partners as well.
David, quick question to you. In the same things that we're talking about here, do you feel that as a system in Singapore, do you feel we let him down? Do you feel that, you know, we could have done more as a Singapore sports system to bring out even more from Joseph Schooling?
I think to a certain extent, yes. I think, like what Mark said, we've never experienced an Olympic gold medalist, and I don't think we were prepared in any way to support him, to sustain his form. I think there was a little bit of a chaotic period after he came back, and nobody was taking charge. Nobody was trying to look, what about 2020, you know, that kind of thing. No one was sitting down. So I think we spoke a bit about this last March. I think the support could have been much better, at least keeping focused and, you know, sustain another 4 years.
So what lessons can we then draw from this? I mean, obviously now this has happened. We can't go back in time to change the kind of support that he received, right?
Mm-hmm.
What could we have done better, and what should we be doing better as a aquatics community or as a sports community?
I think very broadly, we had our first Olympic champion. We understand what it is. And I think to give credit to the Ministry of Culture, Community and Youth as well as Sport SG, there are the sports scientists there who have learned from this as well, you know, supporting him in terms of getting the right expertise into Singapore, as well as grooming the right expertise within our Singaporeans to in fields like nutrition, psychology, sleep, you know, biomechanics, right? I think we have what it takes. And I think within, across the different boards, the sports, we see success there, right? In bowling, in badminton, in table tennis. I think from a Singapore aquatics perspective, we're learning. How do we help athletes as well in terms of managing their workloads? And I think together with the SPEC scholarship, I think giving them the appropriate level of competition, competing at the world levels, sending them to camps so that, you know, they're able to really concentrate right before the major games. I think in let's say from a Joseph Schooling's perspective or a world champion's perspective, I think as a society, we also need to understand that, you know, they've spent 10, 20 years of their life, right, on one single moment, right? And I felt that, you know, for Joseph to actually like do everything that that he required in that single-minded pursuit of that Olympic gold medal, you know, and then to fly back the day after, I think as Olympians, as someone who has reached that, right, he should have taken time to actually understand, you know, that he's achieved, to absorb it and actually embrace this moment with his fellow Olympians in Rio instead of flying back and applying for that as well. And I think having missed that opportunity, it took him a few more weeks, months, even years to understand the gravity of that and understand what he needs to do to refocus for the next challenge, which was 2020.
Yeah, Deepan, I just want to just add some things to what they've said. I like Mark's point about, you know, maybe staying back in Rio for a day or two. But the point is that I don't know if anybody was actually ready for him to win. And so maybe we also in Singapore didn't know what to do with him. And it is understandable because this is how an education of a sports culture happens, is that somebody wins for the first time and then you make missteps. The system makes missteps. The swimmer himself might make some missteps, but that's how you learn, you know. He didn't know. So one of the things he told me in his interview was, at one level, he wanted to go abroad because, as Mark had mentioned, you know, because you get tougher competition there on a daily basis. Yet he wanted to stay close to his parents. So there are so many pulls and pushes, right? He also said he needed to take time off because he was so tired. And sometimes I know an Olympic shooter who won a gold medal. And one of the things he told me after he won the gold medal was, what he had done in the 4 years previous to winning his gold medal, he could never replicate that again. That the madness he went through to get to the gold, he couldn't do that again. He'd have to find some other way to get to the gold medal. And I think this is the same thing happened with Joseph. How hard he worked and what he did, I don't think he could do exactly the same thing again. He had to find a new way to do it. And so the system with him is also finding a new way to do it. So I don't think anybody is to blame for anything. This is just part of the education of a sports culture, I feel.
So Ray, you talked about, you know, how there's no blame game here, and I completely agree. But I guess in the aftermath of this whole retirement, I think we are all looking for ways that we can improve. The next time we have an Olympic gold medalist, what should we do better? What can we do better? And one of the things that, you know, came out from Rohit's interview was that actually surprised me was Joseph talking about how the whole sponsorship and the media glare, he didn't really have anyone to help him through that sort of things. So there's two things, right? One is the sporting part of it, and the other is the sponsorship and all these other things that come with winning a gold medal. So maybe firstly for the sporting bit, I open the question to anyone here. What should we do better in exactly? When we talk about we should have done better, we learn from the mistakes. What are these mistakes and what should we be doing better?
Okay, since they know much better than me because they're in the business, right? But the first thing I would say, apart from anything else, and maybe they've already done this, is I would, you know, Mark's the president, he should just invite Joseph to come and just speak. Maybe they've already done this. I'm second guessing him, but, you know, just come and speak to people and say, look, this is the problems I went through. These are the holes that we need to plug. But again, it's the same thing. Nobody had won Olympic gold or nobody had achieved this level of fame. So how, there's nobody there to guide him, you know? So, and that happens in many countries where people are the first to do something. You know, you take these steps and, you know, there's nobody to hold your hand and you learn on your own. But it would make, we would be doing the whole achievement a disservice if we didn't learn from it. If we didn't learn from what he honestly feels where people let him down, that they could have helped him in this, 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 this. And so we plug those holes. So the next person who it happens to does not face these problems.
I agree with Rohit totally, right? I think the conversations leading up to his retirement were really about what can we do to continue this whole like pipeline of athletes to reach the peak. And I think the conversations would then turn into like, how do we sustain this success? And I think Joseph has, he's always open. He's always open to share, and we are always happy to hear from him. But I think in Singapore, we need to do a better job in institutionalizing all this knowledge that, you know, now that we have a lot of world beaters, right? I mean, getting more and more world beaters in the various sports. How do we actually like sit the athlete down to really think about, you know, what the lessons are? I think in some countries, you know, you like Japan, for example, like Koji Marufuji, for example, who is the chair of the sports Japan sports, right? I think he did a PhD, right, in hammer throwing, and he won the gold medal in 2012. And I think, you know, that whole process of actually thinking, writing into some sort of academic paper to what are the successes, what are the pitfalls, right? That's always going to be part of the knowledge sphere from now on. And, you know, end of the year, we have a arts university coming up. I don't see why we shouldn't have a sports university where, you know, top athletes are able to then continue on with their sports and actually think and reflect. This is all part of this whole process while attaining some sort of academic recognition. I think that's one thing that we do. Secondly, I don't think we've done a really good job in distilling what it actually meant for him to ascend. I think to just now, I think Rohit alluded to this as well. You know, when you're ascending as a teenager, right, and peaking at 21, your journey and what you've done in the past is actually going to be very different from when you're in your 20s. Right? The kind of training that you're going to be doing, the kind of, I wouldn't say distractions, but priorities that you have is going to be very different as well. So I think we could do a better job in taking into account, doing a stock take about what the different lessons are. I think one message actually really got lost was this whole story about the success story of Joseph is also the success story of me and Colin Schooling, right? And how they've supported him. And, you know, through my course, you know, of in swimming since 2016, I come across a lot of parents and they think, you know, as long as they can be a chauffeur, they can drop their kids off at swimming lessons, that's the recipe to success, right? But it's not. Because, you know, what I feel has not come out in terms of messaging and message receiving in the community is that me and Colin were scholars of the sport. They not only just picked their kid up and dropped him off at the pool, but they also motivated him. They made sure that had the right nutrition. They curated, you know, what he needed to succeed. And we need to do a better job in doing that. Parents really have to take an active role in if they want their kid to be, you know, world champions, world beaters, right, and succeed in the sport, and not, you know, outsource parenting to the coaches, because the coaches, their focus is really just what's at the pool, how do I motivate them, how do I inculcate the values and skills in order to win. But the parents need to have that sustained messaging and sustained motivation at home as well.
Rui, I believe you had a question for David and Mark.
So I wasn't reading a question. I was just saying that I really agree with what Mark said, because I feel the role of parents, and he was talking about Colin and May, and I remember the last time I met Colin when he was not well at all. That was the last time I saw him. And still, the only thing he could talk about to me was the position of Joseph's body in the water and how it had changed and how he could become faster again. And he was studying and he was reading. And I thought, wow, this is fantastic. I mean, it's just not love for a child. It is that, how can I help my child in whatever way? And I thought that was a wonderful thing. My question for both of them is that, and this is a bit of a catch-22 for Singapore swimming, is that I think Singapore swimming has really good people. It has very good coaches. I think there's a lot of commitment. I've been to so many practices. They all work hard. The thing is that what Joseph said, which is a pretty obvious thing, is that, you know, you go to America, you are training with the world's best, and that, of course, naturally makes you faster. How do we overcome this disadvantage?
Do I go?
Yeah, you go.
Okay.
USAQ president.
Rohit, that's a really good question. You know, in Singapore Aquatics, you know, we're bringing the right people. We're also grooming the right people to take over and have that sustained interest. In the US, it is a model. It's one of the great models, right? And I think Joe had a great opportunity to be able to spar on a daily basis with the world's best, as well as compete with the world's best, because he was in the right programs, right? I think going to the US is not a silver bullet. You really have to do what me and Colin and Joe had done, study every single program to be able to understand that this is the right program for them, right? And, you know, for every one great program, there could be like 50 programs that really are not great. But I think from Singapore Aquatics perspective, we're looking and studying the different models, whether it's from Australia, the UK, Canada, or the US. But we're doing the right thing for our own systems here in Singapore, because the culture as well as the circumstances for our athletes to be able to, in Singapore, to be able to go and be world beaters, it's vastly different from every other system out there. So we're trying our best, Rohit.
No, I don't doubt that at all. I feel bad for you, because, you know, we have such a small pool of swimmers, and, you know, we have all these inherent disadvantages. So we have to be, I guess, very nimble in the way we try to take on the world. So, that was not an accusation at all. It was, I really know it's a really tough challenge.
Yeah, thanks.
David, if you could wrap up in terms of like what you feel are the lessons we should all learn going forward, what would it be?
One of the biggest lessons that we can take away from this is from Colin and May. I think they've given us a blueprint of what it takes to be Olympic champion. And then we need to go through this blueprint and look, what can we do? What can we replicate? And if not, then where can we do it? How can we do it? I think this is a success story. I think we need to just study it and see whether we can do it here or not. We've got to go somewhere else and do it. Otherwise, we're going to be hard to find our next Olympic gold medalist from swimming.
Perfect segue for my next question then is, people now will ask, right? Will we have a next schooling? You know, who is the next Singapore swimming star for us to, you know, take this forward? And I've got to ask you that, Mark. I mean, what's next for us? How do we find this next star?
Well, why you get all the hard questions?
That's what presidents are for.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you got the big designation. Yeah.
Well, I think Joseph is a generational athlete. A lot of things had to be aligned in order for him to win, right? But you know, I think in that win, we can celebrate, you know, what we've done very, very well. In the past, we've had a pipeline of athletes that are, you know, I wouldn't say world beaters, but they're amongst the world best. I mean, before Joseph, there was Tao Li, right? Before Tao Li, there was Jocelyn. And before Jocelyn, you had, you know, David and Peng Xiong and Tsuto Kokman and Neo Chee Kong. And you know, the list goes on, right? So we will always have contenders out there, right? But the question is really, you know, are the contenders that we have that make the finals or the semifinals, are they going to win? And that is something which that no one actually has an answer to, because, you know, there's so many different factors out there. But I can tell you the pipeline is strong in Singapore Aquatics. We'll have people, and I think the last World Championships, you know, we made a number of semifinals. You know, our relay barely missed the finals. The 4x1 medley relay women barely missed the finals by 0.2. Right, and at the World Championships, and Leticia, she made 4 semifinals as well. So we're up there. We'll continue to have a pipeline of people who will be there up there. It's really a matter of what happens on the day itself in order for us to seize the opportunity and have the next Olympic medal.
Would the 2025 World Aquatics Championships being held there be the perfect platform for this new star to emerge and show Singapore that, hey, you know, it's not all doom and gloom after schooling. There's still plenty to look forward to.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Not only just a platform for our athletes to show, you know, at home, you know, that we can do it at home in our 5 aquatic sports, but also as that catalyst, you know, to inspire the next generation of world beaters. Not only just our home heroes to be able to inspire our local heroes to inspire locals, but also for our athletes who are already taking up the sports, who are taking up the interest in aquatic sports, to actually look at the world's best and say that, you know, I can one day be up there singing my national anthem at the World Championships or Olympic Games.
Perfect. David, coming to you next. Schooling actually refused to blame National Service, but I would say surely that must have played a part. I'm not speaking on his behalf. I'm just saying it logically because it's 2 years of not training as regularly as he would have loved to. It was always going to be hard for him to get back into peak shape. Is there a conversation we should have about athletes, especially at the high performance level, when it comes to national service? Is that a conversation we need to have?
I think we've been ding-donging this for a while already. During my time, we allowed deferments. During his time, no. And then now the deferments have, you know, there are really stringent marks that you have to hit before you get deferment. So I think there are things that we can talk about to help the national athletes. I feel that maybe SAQ or Sport Singapore can actually look into it also. If not, you have all these young male athletes that are just trying their dundas basket to get whatever they can before they hit 18. And then by then, they'll all be burnt out. That's a huge difference when you say for American or Aussie, you know, they don't have to go through that. They don't have to grind every day before 18. And they just go through the process and develop as they are. But our athletes do face that. So I think we lose a lot from that NS thing. So, but I understand that the policies are made for all sports. So I think it's going to be a long process, long drawn process. I don't know whether SAQ can do something about. I don't know. Maybe Rohit has an inside.
Yeah, Rohit. Maybe the question to you is this an important conversation to be had at this moment where we look back? It's to me, it's one of the lessons that maybe we can learn from. I mean, we talk about the other lessons that we learn, right? And this could be one of them. You know, do you feel the authorities or the stakeholders will have that conversation?
I mean, there's no question. It's a conversation that it is going on, as David said, is ding-donging between, you know, I think it's defense comes first. I pretty much understand that, you know, and I think even Joseph said that to me. But eventually, in the end, if we are investing so much money in athletes in Singapore, so sometimes I think of it like I'm a little bit of an outsider that I'm seeing so much money invested in Singapore athletes and Singapore sports, and then the men will come to a point and then they go and then, you know, their form just falls. So the first part, one of the things I feel which is not adequately done is 2 things. One is, I don't think there's enough conversation with the public sometimes to understand what happens to athletes when they go into NS? They think, oh no, you know, they're just trying to skip national service. No, they're not. But the fact remains that I think Jonathan Tan told me once that, you know, people think, oh, you miss swimming for just 2-3 days, it's no big deal. But yes, there is, because these guys would know that getting back your feel in the water can take you a couple of days. So actually, you're missing much more than 2-3 days. And when you are trying to be great, right, and you're trying to take on the world, then obviously these narrow, small things are what matter. So I think that's one thing, is to have a good conversation in the public about what happens to athletes when they are not training full time, right? And the second thing is, I just feel that, you know, both sport and defense have to have slightly open, I'm not saying they don't, I'm just saying I'm not privy to these conversations, but they have to have open minds when they go into conversations of how we go to help each other. That swimming understands, of course, the place of defense in this country, which is first. And the people in, you know, defense understand that, look, we need to do this for athletes to see how we can find some fluid system for it to work. That there should be no impasse, you know. So I don't know if there is. As I said, I'm not privy to these discussions. But these are two things. And I think we have to keep having this conversation. And it's not like, you know, athletes are being spoiled or given special privileges and whatnot. You know, people often, I feel, you know, they will go on, you know, why don't we give special privileges to people in other fields or whatever? But in other fields, I feel, and I'm sure people will argue that I'm wrong, but let's say in music or something like that, or the arts. So it's, you're not as time bound as you are as an athlete. You can be a musician at any age. I'm sure those early years help as well. But athletes are living in a very compressed universe. And so 2 years can be 1/5 of an athlete's lifetime. And so therefore, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I think like Rohit mentioned, these are important conversations that we should have. And I do hope that these conversations take place beyond just this podcast studio. You know, winding down our conversation now, Mark, what support will Singapore Aquatics provide to schooling as he, you know, goes into this transition of a post-swimming career?
Okay. Maybe I'll just add a little bit on the NS question, right? And I think it was very, I guess, encouraging to hear that for Joe. He felt that, you know, he was given adequate flexibility to train, you know, at the media get-together as well, I think, the various interviews that he was given. And I think that flexibility is given by MINDEF for exceptional talent. Number one, they have to be good soldiers, of course, and they complete their work to actually come out and train. But I think we also can look at different models out there. You know, I think Korea is another example of a country that has excelled in swimming, right, in aquatic sports. They recently came back with a 200-meter gold medalist, freestyle man, right? And he's exempted from national service. I'm not saying that Singapore should do that, but I think it really, it's just one of those examples that, you know, if you've excelled in this, you know, there are different ways to serve your nation. I'm not saying that defense is secondary to, like, sporting achievements, but it's just one example. And also, we need to look at the individuals, right? Really look at, you know, does it really affect the trajectory of an athlete across the board, across different sports? I think for swimming, it's mission critical that we actually allow an athlete to go through that trajectory, especially in those 2 years, you know, at their physical peak, to be able to do that. But we've also seen in some examples, Tiong Chen Wei, right? Tiong, after his national service, he was a little bit more matured. And he was able to then break the Asian record in the 50 meters butterfly. But for Johnny, right, Jonathan, I think that was a tragedy in my mind. Like he couldn't come out and train. He was training on the weekends, you know, and he lost a little bit of flexibility as well as water feel, and that's definitely going to attract it. You know, although he did qualify for the Olympic Games after his national service, but you know, in my mind, it would always have been, what if he had gotten his deferment, right? His trajectory would probably be different, right? He'll probably be in the finals of the World Champs. He'll probably be in contention for medaling. I'm not saying that he isn't, but you know, it really depends on the athlete. So back to your question about what support that we will provide Joseph Schooling. I think we have various schemes within Singapore Aquatics to support our retiring athletes, right? I think we have the SGP fund that is that will help athletes, you know, go through courses or things that that are going to help them transition into their careers. I think some of the athletes at the Asian who were Asian medalists in 2018 have drawn on this fund as well, whether it's to go through courses or you know, help them with their businesses to be able to transition. I think this whole conversation on transition, it's not an academic discussion. It's really more like a fine art on how do we execute. Each athlete is very, very different. So we have that within Singapore Aquatics to help athletes, thankfully, right now. But we'll also have this open channel with Joe. You know, he, through his club, sports schooling, swim schooling, definitely will be part of our ecosystem to help groom and develop athletes his own way through his swim schools. But also the door is open to Joe, right? Whether he wants to come back in a more official basis as an administrator, as someone in our community, to be able to have that strong voice to shape policy, to shape discussions on how we groom athletes at a national level.
All right, perfect. Before I let three of you go, my last question is to actually wrap up everything that we've discussed so far. And I guess that question will invite that. Is this, Joseph Schooling has retired at 28. If there is one lesson Singapore should learn, what is it? Rohit, go.
No, as I said right at the beginning of the program, for me, this is always an important thing, is that, you know, we talk about lessons from losing all the time, right? I think Joseph has given us lessons from winning. When you're winning at the big time is something that we have not done, right? There are a lot of lessons. So I think he's given us a lot of things to think about with his winning. What do we do with winning? Not just how do we win, but what do we do with winning? How do we manage winning? How do we take an athlete to the next step after he's won? You know, so there are a lot of things he's given us to think about, which we had never considered before.
All right, Mark?
Well, there's so many lessons, right, through this like 10-year journey that Joe has brought us, you know, the highs, the lows. I think the one lesson that I think really stands out is that belief, right? In spite of everything, he and his parents were able to accomplish something which everyone thought was a dream, right? And you know, that single self-belief, right, is actually what's going to change and shape champions in future, you know? Whether you're going to stand behind the blocks at the final of the Olympic Games, right, with your knee shaking, or whether you're going to say that, you know what, so what if I have the three other best flyers in the world, right, swimming next to me? I'm going to take it out. I'm going to come back strong, and I'm going to win this, not only just for myself, but my family, but the people who supported me and for Singapore.
All right, David?
Yeah, there's so many things to take away. I think my message, okay, and maybe not a lesson per se, but I think for Joe, I think he's won the holy grail in sport, because and nobody's going to change that. Wherever he goes into hereafter, I think he'll always be in the history books, and every Singaporean henceforth in history, going to learn about Singapore history, is going to know Joseph Schooling's name. So I think this is an inspiration for all Singaporeans to be able to have somebody like Joseph, and also to maybe learn from him.
All right.
Can I just add one thing? I just want to add one thing to what Mark said. I really like both their points, especially Mark's thing about self-belief. But one of the things that I've seen with Singapore athletes over 17 years is that I feel sometimes they can be a bit shy and hesitant to show off their aggressive, assertive self. And one of the great lessons about Joe, I think, which of course I also think in part he learned in America, he's cocky, and it's actually not a bad thing. We shouldn't in Asia look at that as a bad thing. You know, it's okay to go out there and believe that you can beat the best. I mean, and to feel it and to show it in your body language, it's not a bad thing.
I totally agree. You know, I wouldn't just attribute it to the US system or the system that he grew up in, but also to Uncle Colin, Auntie May, you know.
No, yeah. Sure, of course. Of course. Colin, yeah, for sure.
I think it's been a brilliant conversation. I'm sure we covered plenty of aspects about the retirement and what we can learn as a sporting community and beyond. Rohit, David, Mark, thank you so much for joining me on the conversation. I hope our listeners will enjoy it as well.
Thank you.
Send your feedback to podcast@sph.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.